We've got a PW Torch VIP sale going on this month. If you are interested in becoming a VIP member, you can get $6 off any subscription. That brings a one-month sub down to $4. And you can listen to our AEW Revolution post-event roundtable. Todd Martin, Rich Fan, and I discuss the event for about an hour right after the show ended, exclusively for VIP members. You also will get the WrestleMania post-show roundtables following Night 1 and Night 2 at the beginning of next month as part of that deal. And you get everything in between. I have brought back the Ask the Editor version of the Wade Keller Hotline. The last two Wednesdays, we've dropped that with me responding with long-form answers to a wide array of topics. And the Focus on AEW and Focus on WWE insider news updates with my expanded analysis have also been brought back more frequently lately, including breakdowns of minute-by-minute numbers for Dynamite and SmackDown in two recent updates, and also behind-the-scenes news on Bray Wyatt and how he's being written and by whom, and other exclusive backstage notes and insights. We also are running our 18 Years Ago podcast series on the nearly 18th anniversary of podcasts when they were originally published back in 2005. We feature them on the PW Torch VIP podcast feed. This includes our post-pay-per-view roundtables and also Wade Keller hotlines with a ton of insider news. And right now, this week, we are running a series of podcasts detailing with incredible behind-the-scenes details, sometimes excruciating details, on what was going on with Edge, Lita, and Matt Hardy in that kind of love triangle controversy of 2005 that changed the course of several careers. At the time, I reported a ton of details on how the locker room was reacting to them, how Vince McMahon, if he was involved, because Vince was actually away with his injury at that time, if he was involved, and just the ups and downs and the drama of everything that blew up behind the scenes there. It's also the beginning, 18 years ago, of John Cena and Batista's push, and there's a lot of fun analysis of what we thought of them at the beginning of their upward trajectory. I could go on. There's just so many great VIP exclusive features. You get these shows ad-free and plug-free, and you get access to our ad-free Lightning Fast VIP website with all the content that's on the free site, plus bonus content, including the roundtable reviews in written format from the Torch staff of AEW Revolution. We'll be doing that for WrestleMania coming up also, plus exclusive columns and more. So go VIP, pwtorch.com/govip. The coupon code to get $6 off, and you can apply that $6 coupon to a one-month, a three-month, or a one-year sub. But again, that brings a one-month sub down to $4 for everything I just mentioned and more. The coupon code is March 23. Enter that when you sign up at pwtorch.com/govip. And yes, we are compatible with the Apple Podcasts app. When you sign up, you'll get an email and you click on that link and it authorizes you. No advanced settings, no passwords, nothing complicated. And we are compatible with many other podcast apps in a similar way. pwtorch.com/govip, March 23. It's a good time to go VIP.
Hello, wrestling fans. You are listening to Wrestling Coast to Coast, a Pro Wrestling Torch daily cast focusing on independent wrestling. I am Chris Maitland, and with me as always, the man, the myth, the McClellan, Justin McClellan. Justin, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well, Chris. It's been a very exciting week. How are you?
I'm doing well as well. Our Pitt Panthers won their first NCAA basketball game in the men's tournament since 2014 in lovely Dayton, Ohio. I was present for that one.
And, somewhat strangely, or maybe this is actually ironic. Even though it was in my hometown, you were the one who went to the game.
Yes, I only live an hour from Dayton. For those of you not familiar with Ohio geography, but excited to see the Panthers. The last time I saw them play in the tournament live, they lost the famous Brad Pitt game to Bradley back in 2006, but was glad to see them be on the winning end this time. Commiserations to anyone who listens to the show who's an alum of Mississippi State.
Yeah, and if any Ohio or Iowa State listeners, you know, you're next. We're coming for you.
There we go. So A lot of people watching basketball, men's and women's tournament going on now. March Madness. A lot of people focused on other things coming up. March is also a very busy time for wrestling, not only around the world. Obviously, WrestleMania, the biggest event of the year, actually takes place in April, first and second, but there's a lot of matches that, and shows that take place before the WrestleMania event. We'll be going over some of those and our schedule or our plan in a few weeks as we take you all around the WrestleMania weekend, visiting different shows, different matches. We're going to be talking about that. Our show on April 5th, if I have the date right, after WrestleMania weekend. Additionally, Wrestling Coast to Coast will be out at a show this weekend in Columbus, Ohio, the return of the Ohio Wrestling Alliance, a show called Standing Room Only, but we're old. We paid for seats.
Because when I saw the name, I was like, oh, please have chairs.
We're not going to stand for too long. They have moved providers to Fight TV. I don't know if this is available on Fight Plus, so not sure if we'll be covering a match on our show next week, but we'll be there and nothing better than seeing live wrestling.
True. Maybe. Unless some kid, unless a wrestler pours tequila in your eye.
That's true. That could be
not so great.
And additionally, we will be at the Pro Wrestling Revolver show on April 6th in lovely Dayton, Ohio.
Yes. Which I will be at that show. I won't be watching it at home, like that Pitt game.
So to take you all back, last week we wish Justin a happy birthday on March 8th. But a very important event happened, the anniversary of it on March 9th, back in 1997, which is the death of one of my favorite rappers as a kid, the Notorious B.I.G. So you see a lot of people quoting rap music, talk about March 9th. Notorious B.I.G. had a song on his Life After Death album called Going Back to Cali. And he had a line in it. If I had to pick the coast, I have to pick the east. I live out there, so don't go there. And even though I am a Midwesterner now, living in Central Ohio, I am partial to the east, being a New Yorker, spending majority of my life so far there. But West Coast Pro Wrestling doesn't agree with me on the Notorious B.I.G. They think West Coast is the best coast. And that's why they named their most recent show after that. West Coast Best Coast took place on March 4th, 2023. It aired on IWTV. We were going to cover this show last week, but we did not due to it not being available on IWTV until very close to our recording time. So we covered Women's Wrestling Army instead and enjoyed those shows. But with this show being available, we're going to discuss it now. Your commentators are James Kincaid and Veda Scott. The opening match was Bret the Threat versus Jihad Jewel. This match was your simple opening contest where Bret was the face, Jewel was the heel, and it had a finish that I can't even recall seeing. Or I can't remember the last time I saw it, to be more accurate. Bret the Threat won by submission with the sleeper in 6 minutes and 3 seconds. Pretty standard opening match. I liked Bret the Threat. He seemed to be a pretty cool babyface. Would like to see more of him in the future. And he is your winner.
Yeah, I don't even know if this was like technically the opener. It almost felt like a dark match you'd see with newer guys getting a tryout or just ring experience. Like, it even felt like they did the big opener for the match after this. But it was, like, it was good for, like you said, like a 6-minute kind of opener match. Jia Jewel, he's a Cajun gentleman who apparently was raised by Gators. And Brett's more of, like, a shooter type. So I sort of worried this might be a styles clash. But they did okay. I thought, like you said, I thought Brett had a good look. And I thought his moves looked good. He seemed kind of hesitant at times. Like, he'd take a while to set stuff up, but he did. But when he did do the moves, he looked really good. He did, like, He did too many, I would say, people's elbow type moves, i.e. like you run the ropes and do something kind of crazy and take a long time before finishing your move. He did both a swaggering elbow drop and then like this high stomp before he did a leg drop. And I think probably only need one of those in your arsenal. Maybe he was trying them out to see which got the best reaction. Overall, Brett hit a, like a very crazy high angle Saito suplex, like you said, and then he got the sleeper hold on for the submission. It was basic, but I thought Brett in particular showed a lot of potential.
Daily Cast listeners, thank you, first of all, for streaming the shows. Be sure you're subscribing. Just search PW Torch in Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to pro wrestling podcasts. But while you're at it, if you're not yet, please subscribe to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast and Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Shows. Search Wade Keller and see two logos pop up, a blue one and a red one. The red logo, the post shows, cover Raw and SmackDown each week with a fast turnaround time of a couple hours after the shows end. And also, every Saturday, we present a flashback to our analysis from 5 years ago that week, covering Raw. Jason Palwell from ProWrestling.net joins me, and we analyze what happened on Raw 5 years ago. So check out that time capsule every weekend. The Blue Logo Show features the Thursday flagship, plus our first-run interviews, our classic interviews, and our mailbag segments. So, again, search Wade Keller and click subscribe to both the red logo and the blue logo.
The second match. Now, the last time we talked about West Coast Pro in January, Adrian Quest and Los Solacitos attacked the Conglomerate, and now we have a return match where that team is going up against certain members of the Conglomerate. Alpha Zoe was the only member to be in this match because D-Grow was not available, and Midas Creed was still injury. Still out, selling his injury from the attack. Nice to see someone selling an injury from an attack for a few months, not just returning immediately. And so Alpha Zoe had a mystery partner. Two mystery partners. The first person he brings out is Juicy Finau. And the second, the returning AJ Gray, who hadn't been seen in West Coast Pro for quite some time. And this was your kind of typical babyface match, where the babyface brings in two mystery partners who are big and scary. They end up attacking the Los Suavecitos and Adrian Quest, but the heel team were able to regain their footing. They beat up Alpha Zoe for a while, but finally he gets the hot tag. It turns around. I should also mention that Juicy Finau did a dive to the outside, which is frightening. Just watching it, I could only imagine how frightening it was for someone who had to catch him. Ultimately, one member of Los Angeles was left in the ring by himself. He got taken out by D-Rogue and AJ Gray and finished off with a Juicy Finau splash off the top rope. Your babyfaces are your winners in 12 minutes and 4 seconds.
I like this match, but I thought it had kind of a weird structure because it started, it was just this crazy brawl, and that was when the faces were totally in control, just beating Los Suavecitos all around the building. I think Juicy Finau threw one of them into a bar. Like, even though we heard something, it sounded like glass breaking, but it wasn't on screen, but I assume it was some bottle being broken. And then it was like when the heels started to get the heat, it turned into like a very technically sound, normal tag team match, which I thought it was just kind of a weird like flip of the switch of what kind of match are you doing. But both worked well. Suavecitos did this cool thing I liked where one of them had Alpha Zoe halfway down for a sunset flip, but the guy doing the flip, instead of pulling him down, catapulted him back forward into a kick from his partner. That was really cool. Quest did like a kind of crazy submission move. It started like a sharpshooter, except he didn't have his leg between his opponent's legs, and then he used his feet to trap his opponent's arms. They did a super this high spine buster that sent one of the Los Suavecitos to the seventh circle of hell, per announcer James Kincaid. Like you said, Juicy did a couple kind of crazy dives that would have been pretty scary if you were there. But overall, it was a hot maybe opener, official opener. It had enough chaos to get the crowd really going, and very fun overall.
The third match on the show was to crown the first ever West Coast Pro Women's Champion. It matches between Sandra Moon and Masha Slamovic. They got right to it. They worked at a pretty quick pace. Maybe they thought they didn't have a lot of time and they wanted to get to as many moves as they could. This is a good match. I really enjoyed it. It kind of led to the finish. They traded submissions and reversals. Both competitors kicked out of moves that you would see them finish off others with. Eventually, Slamovic hit the snowplow in 10 minutes and 32 seconds to pin Moon and become your winner and first inaugural West Coast Pro Women's World Champion. She was given the belt by WWE Hall of Famer and current WWE Women's Tag Team Champion, Lita, who congratulated both her and Moon on their effort. Masha Slamovic is your winner.
I really like this match. It was one of my favorites on the show. It was good. We've had a kind of a Masha dry spell as of late. For a while, it felt like she was every show we watched, we got a Masha match, and then somehow our circles drifted apart. But now we're back. I really like Masha. I think she is one of the bigger indie stars I haven't seen live. She's one like definitely I want to check off my list. I really think of people we cover, she's one of the ones that has a real shot. I think she could be a big star in one of the major federations someday. And a lot of that reason was on display here. She just I love the explosiveness of her offense and just the intensity she brings. Sandra Moon, she was a lot more sloppy than Masha, although she wasn't She wasn't horribly bad, but some of her stuff was a little shaky. Masha, though, kept it pretty together. Sandra was trying to do this snake eyes thing, but Masha escaped and hit a very nasty looking German kind of on Sandra's shoulder. She looked a little wobbly after that for a minute. Masha, of course, delivered her trademark hard kicks and got a kind of a Blue Thunder Bomb. It only got two because I know I've never seen the Blue Thunder Bomb actually pin anyone when we've been doing these shows. Masha did this top rope drop kick, like the kind Finn Balor does where you put both your feet into it and land just flat on your back. She did that twice, and I would think doing that off the top rope would have to be hard on your back just the way you land. Masha, of course, went to the well once too often on those drop kicks. Sandra cut her off, but Masha still managed to headbutt her. And then later Masha jumped off the top rope, but Sandra kind of caught her for a Boston Crab. She didn't really pull the move off super smoothly, but she did manage to make it. Masha did Kofi Kingston's SOS move. Masha got the White Knight driver for a two count. That looked very scary because it looked like she was pretty close to actually dumping Sandra on her head. Sandra got her finish, which is a crazier move called the Moon's Landing. It's a gut wrench suplex where it looked like she dumped her right on her head. I don't know how they pulled that off. Like you said, finally Masha hit the snowplow. It was just a total sprint, like you said, just nonstop moves. Can't say enough. I really enjoy Masha's intensity and how crisp her moves look. And she has an awesome name, so a lot to like there.
Support us on Patreon starting at $4.99. Get these shows ad-free and bonus VIP content. That's $4.99 on Patreon. Patreon.com/PWTorchVIP. That's Patreon.com/PWTorchVIP. That is the quickest, cheapest, and easiest way to support us and enjoy these shows with a streamlined listening experience. The Wade Keller post shows, podcasts, and the PW Torch daily casts plus some random VIP bonus content.
Yamasha has been an impact for probably the last 8 or 9 months. She's had what I would say was kind of an interesting push. She came in, she was like the unbeatable force at Impact for a long time. Impact actually a really good booking decision of, you know, when women were leaving the company, their pretty much last match was against Masha. She destroyed them.
That's smart.
So it looked like she was ridding, you know, basically running people out of the company. She, one of her first big wins was over Jessica Havoc, which led to her character change. And so she was this unbeatable force who beat everyone, and finally she ended up in a match with then Impact champion Jordynne Grace, a Knockouts champion. And so people thought, this is actually, you know, where you build a match, unbeatable challenger versus, you know, credible champion. And Jordynne Grace won in a very good match. And I thought she was going to go away for a while. I ended up having a return match on one of the one of the Impact specials. About a month or so later, which Jordynne Grace won again. Then Masha won a number one contenders match against an Impact. And then she got a match against now current Impact champion Mickie James, but she ended up losing to her as well. She's actually currently in a feud with Mickie James. There's actually a match coming up on Impact the next couple weeks. It's her, Masha Slamovic, and Bully Ray against Mickie James and Tommy Dreamer. So that'll be interesting. But she's shown a lot of potential. One person we've seen grow a lot since we started doing this podcast. She's wrestled in a lot of different places, and so she does have a, you know, Impact's obviously not the biggest promotion in the world, but she does have at least a small growing national presence. The fourth match on the show, Luchador match, had, of course, two of my favorites who I've talked about a lot on the show. Black Taurus and Los Vipers versus Vivento, Aramis, and Rey Harus. The thing about this match, too, is funny. We talked about how the last match started out with a sprint. This match did not. It started off kind of slow for about maybe 90 seconds, and then they went to all the stuff the luchadors typically do. And at one point, Rey Harus was left by himself, but he fought out, made his own comeback. The finish was Rey Harus, Aramis, and Vivento were on the top rope. Vivento and Aramis dive on Black Taurus and one of the Vipers. The other one gets hit with, I'm not even sure the name of this finisher, but it's Rey Harus's top rope victory roll. And he gets the victory for his team in 15 minutes and 19 seconds. Vivento, Aramis, and Rey Harus are your winners.
Yeah, this was, like you said, it's for about 90 seconds it was slow, and then it was pretty wild for the next 12 minutes. This was the kind of wild lucha match you expect on indie shows. I wasn't very familiar with the Viper or Los Vipers before this match. They came out wearing baseball jerseys, and one of them looked like he was wearing a full baseball uniform with the pants even. Not sure what that was about. Aramis and Latigo early did some really cool, I said like gymnastics. I don't mean that as a put down. It's just stuff that's hard to describe, but just the way the amazing, I said fluidity, like how they just move from one place to the next. I thought that was really impressive. The faces all tried to do like a triple run at the same time. All three got caught. And Taurus ended up doing a doomsday style cross body block, which is to say like he jumped off the top rope onto Aramis and Harus as they were being held up by the Los Vipers. Toxin did a super awesome corkscrew plancha. Like the height he got on that jump was just outstanding. Taurus held Vivento up for a power bomb, but Toxin jumped up and delivered a backstabber just straight from the mat up to that height. That was another crazy height. at one point, like the crowd was really into it, and then Viento did this very sloppy tilt-a-whirl head scissors that like really quieted them down because it was awkward and it just stood out so much from all the other cool stuff going on. It like deflated them for a couple seconds, but they got the crowd back. Like Viento, when he tried the Super Rana, but Toxin turned it into a sit-out super power bomb. Taurus murdered basically Aramis with a pop-up Samoan drop. Aramis tried the Super Rana, but Taurus ended up press slamming him off the top of the rope. Taurus accidentally speared Toxin. Viento then did a poison Rana, but he ran into a lariat, so all six guys were down. Finally, like you said, Taurus did the victory roll to Toxin off the top rope. It was a very spectacular match from start to finish. This unbelievable action and crazy moves. Basically, like I said, what you would expect from this Lucha Indie tag match.
The next match, tag team match between the World West Coast Wrecking Crew, Jarrell Nelson and Royce Isaacs, against the Miracle Generation, Dustin Waller and Kylan King, who were listed as the IWTV Tag Team Champions. This match was on IWTV, but this is a non-title match. The West Coast Wrecking Crew are the bigger team. They basically displayed their power over the Miracle Generation, who tried to use guile and quickness to get around them. And for a while, they were able to do that. This match was a really good contrast between a bigger, more experienced team and a faster team who had to try to be resourceful to get away from the bigger, stronger team. Unfortunately, it didn't work out in the end. They were trying to survive a lot of different moves, and the end, it didn't work out when West Coast Wrecking Crew hit a combined cutter on Dustin Waller and pinned him in 16 minutes and 57 seconds. Don't know if it makes them the number one contenders for the IWTV Tag Team Championship, but it should. West Coast Wrecking Crew are your winners.
I was thinking the same thing about the tag team titles. I was disappointed at first the Miracle Generation didn't bring the belts with them, but at least the announcers talked about it and talked them up as being the tag champs, so that was good. I really like this match. This was actually my favorite match on the show. I thought both teams worked really well together. Miracle Generation, when they start, they did like a rock, paper, scissors game to figure out who was going to start. I like when certain teams can get away with that, and it's always like a cute spot. You know, it wouldn't fit a very serious tag team like FTR, you know, but I think for certain teams, it, like when it fits their personality, it's always a nice spot. Early on, Isaacs wasn't taking like any of King's just shenanigans, and King basically like fled the ring and tagged in an unwilling Waller, who's like, I don't want to get in with this guy. Waller immediately tried like a shoulder block, and he sold it like he ran into a brick wall in a really funny spot. King did like a pull out of the corner. It's like this thing we're seeing a lot more of, where a guy will pull someone up by his opponent up. If the opponent's laying down, he'll pull him up by both hands into some move. In this case, he pulled him up into a spine buster that looked really good. Isaacs did the West Coast Wrecking Crew standard move where he hoists a guy up in a suplex position, carried him around the building. It's always fun, always gets a pop. It's cooler when they do it in six-man tags, so both Nelson and Isaacs do it while, like, Tom Lawler, the third guy, does something in the ring, like we saw at the last show. In this case, Isaacs did it to Waller and ended up slamming him on the stage entrance, and Waller kind of sold being dropped there for a comically long time. Basically, another neat part was the tide finally turned because West Coast Wrecking Crew made just a mistake. Nelson wasn't aware of any, like, where he was in the ring, and that let King make this lucky blind tag behind his back. This is just a neat little story, and it actually, the reverse happened later in the match too, where ring positioning cost Miracle Generation. West Coast Wrecking Crew gave Waller like a slingshot into a powerbomb. I think I've said this before, but I love I love combos that involve a wrestler slingshotting his opponent into a move by a partner. I think we need more of those throughout wrestling. This is really when the match got turned up to high gear. They started going crazy. Pretty scary dive to the floor by King onto Isaacs. Nelson powerbombed Waller into Isaacs, Nelson powerbombed Waller into Isaacs, but Waller turned the powerbomb into a cutter on the way down. That was a very cool counter. Miracle Generation hit a frog, or Waller hit a frog splash for two. Isaacs gave Walker an exploder over the top rope onto King, and finally they did a cutter move. The match was 17 minutes. It didn't feel like it at all to me. It was just another nonstop action. At first, it almost felt like the heat segment on the Miracle Generation was going long, but it just kept building well, and the last 5 minutes were pure chaos in the best way. Like I said, my favorite match on the show.
You don't have to wait for the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show to find out what I thought of Monday Night Raw and SmackDown each week. You can check out my reports that are updated live throughout Raw and SmackDown at pwtorch.com. My written report will tell you what's happening in detail in case you missed the show, and it'll also analyze key segments and give my random thoughts and quips on what I am watching as it airs. So check it out every Monday night and Tuesday night at pwtorch.com. That also applies to WWE pay-per-views. I cover those live at pwtorch.com with a detailed written report with star ratings. And of course, you can find other TV reports from other contributors to PW Torch, such as NXT, ROH Impact Wrestling, and more. Check it out, pwtorch.com, your first stop for TV and pay-per-view written reports.
I enjoyed this match. It was not my favorite match on the show, but you know, there's a lot of talk about different tag teams in wrestling and which ones are good and which ones are not. But these two tag teams on the independent scene, one a bit more established than the other. Every time I've seen them, they've always put in really good performances, and definitely two teams that should be getting more notoriety. And hopefully they will match up again due to the fact that West Coast Wrecking Crew defeated Miracle Generation and should be top contenders for the IWTV Tag Team Championships. Sixth match, another match set up from a previous show. No disqualification match between Ricky Shane Page and Vinny Massaro. One other thing I liked about this match, I know we'll give my overall thoughts on West Coast Pro at the end, very high on this, but you know, Vinny Massaro, who comes out typically kind of in a joyful mood, was not after what happened with him and Ricky Shane Page in the last match. He came out ready to fight. Now, this match was pretty violent. They brawled on the outside. They both bled. A pizza cutter appeared. There was barbed wire wrapped around Massaro, and Page dove on top of it, which I don't know if that really made sense or not. But either way, Massaro was able to recover from that, get out of that barbed wire. He ended up hitting the soaring elbow on Ricky Shane Page and defeating him in 16 minutes and 23 seconds. Vinny Massaro is your winner.
Yeah, like you, I really took notice of how Vinny came out with a different demeanor. You know, usually he's this jolly, you know, total baby face playing around with the crowd. And this time he was super serious, kind of undercut because he still came out to That's Amore, which is a kind of goofy entrance song. But he was definitely serious. Early on, Ricky Shane Page was sent flying into a whole row of chairs. I like to know, as always, I always feel bad for people who have to flee out of the way and then try to get their chairs organized. And it's like, what if you had a coat on one of those chairs, or you put your popcorn down and now it's just gone forever? It's just chaos, and it makes me feel bad. The crowd brawl, unfortunately, was kind of poorly lit, so you couldn't see a lot. The announcers then went on this weird rant about how hating people from Cleveland, which is Ricky Shane Page's hometown, and apparently Massaro really dislikes Clevelanders, and even like, I guess, because Ricky Shane Page is in like this Ohio-centric group, you know, they talked about how the dislike of Ohio goes well beyond even typical East Coast, West Coast stuff. So, you know, Chris, if you are thinking of going out there for a show, you should probably keep that in mind. Maybe hide where you're from.
Or, so you're telling me in California, after all the things I talked about and the man I referenced before, it is scarier or more dangerous to say you're from Ohio than from New York?
That is what James Kincaid said. I thought I was dubious of this assertion, but it is Kincaid. It was Kincaid's thoughts, so I'm just repeating them.
Fair enough.
Fair enough. Vinny got busted open. Ricky Shane Page was outside the ring, threw a garbage can at his head, and it was pretty amazing that Vinny had to lay there and let himself get hit with it. I don't think I have that self-control over my body. After that, RSP had found all kinds of different ways to make Vinny's head collide with that trash can. Vinny, when he took over, it was like he was trying to find something under the ring, and he had trouble, so at one point he gave up and did some awesome, actual nice wrestling moves like a Saito suplex. Unfortunately, he did go back and find what he was looking for, which is the pizza cutter, my actual legitimate least favorite, like, gross weapon. I just shudder thinking about actually using it. Ugh. Not a fan of that. Like you said, RSP wrapped Ricky with barbed wire, but that's like a double-edged strip of barbed wire because Vinny was a weapon with it too. For all the, as you noted, Vinny got out of the barbed wire at one point because the ref helped him. For all the people who were mad about the referees holding the ladder for Hobbs in that ladder match a couple weeks back, in this case, the ref was literally unwrapping this guy with barbed wire. They did some tax stuff, also not a fan of, but I did like the part where it was a very nice touch where Vinny stuffed tax in Ricky's mouth, and then he would punch Ricky so Ricky would spit some of the tax out, which was a definitely unique visual. It was a nice touch, although I don't know how you could hold thumbtacks in your mouth and try and spit a selected amount of them out. That also makes me shudder. On principle, I didn't like a lot of things in this match, but it did not drag. I've seen many weapons matches that felt a lot longer than this. And I did like that they made a big enough deal about Vinny having this long win streak and this match being an important part of that. And that actually came into play later in the show.
They had to have an intermission after that match, not shown to us on IWTV. They cut that out, but if you're watching live, there's an intermission.
To get the thumbtacks out of the ring.
Yeah, thumbtacks, barbed wire, sanitized blood.
Right.
Chris Hero was just out there. No music, which is unfortunate because I love his theme song.
He was in a Duke sweatshirt, wasn't he?
Yeah, Chris Hero, a wrestler that, you know, we started watching independent wrestling when we were in college a long time ago.
We met him once in like one of the shows. He is also from Dayton.
He's from Dayton.
Yeah.
And not only that, I actually, the only purchase I ever have done or will do involving Duke University was one of his shirts at an Evolve show for the wife of one rich fan.
Yeah.
And in fact, when I was wearing a Chris Hero shirt when I bought that.
I just remember, we were in college. He's talked to us for, like, a long time. He's a super nice guy.
He's a super nice guy. You know, he's our age. And obviously a great wrestler throughout the years, wrestling in Ring of Honor and NXT and all around the world. The microphone was not that great. Wasn't able to pick up everything. But he announced that he would be the official matchmaker for West Coast Pro. I'm sure we'll be seeing him more on these shows going forward. The next match on the show, which was my favorite match on the show just because it's unique, Timothy Thatcher versus Mike Bailey. I haven't seen Timothy Thatcher wrestle in a while. I used to see him quite often in Evolve, and he was one that the crowd seemed to not like his style of wrestling, but I feel like as time has gone on, his style has stuck out even more and more because of how unique it is. Doing a lot of submissions, a lot of ground, holes, all those type of things. I kept thinking I need to find a match between him and Jonathan Gresham. There has to be one out there somewhere.
Well, between here and Germany, definitely.
Yeah. Either way, he had the advantage of Bayley for the most part. He actually does one of the great things that Gresham does, which is putting someone in a pinning predicament, and then when they kick out, transitioning to a hold. He got an armbar on Bayley, but Bayley was able to get out. He was able to hit a couple quick kicks, his kicks in the ropes, and hit Thatcher with the ultimate weapon. So Mike Bayley was your winner in 15 minutes and 21 seconds, capitalizing on getting out that armbar, but a very excellent match.
Just another quick reminder, pwtorch.com/govip, coupon code MARCH23, gets you $6 off a VIP subscription this month. Go VIP, hear our Post-Revolution Roundtable podcast, exclusively for VIP members. That membership will give you instant access to our Post-Revolution pay-per-view roundtable that we recorded immediately after Revolution for VIP members, and that will also include our Night 1 and Night 2 post-event roundtables, plus everything in between, our 18 years ago podcast, vintage insider news updates from me and the Torch team, and new Wade Keller hotlines with exclusive news and many other features. Full details at pwtorch.com/govip, coupon code MARCH23 gets you $6 off, 60% off a 1 month sub, or $6 off a 3 month or 1 year sub.
Are you a nostalgic wrestling fan? Do you want to hear about shows you haven't seen in 10, 20, maybe even 30 years? Well, I have the show for you. I'm PWTorch.com contributor Frank Pettiani, and since December of 2020, I've hosted Pro Wrestling Then and Now. Together with a rotating chair of co-hosts, we go back and review old shows from top to bottom, talk about where the wrestlers were at the time, and compare what's taking place now to what took place then. You can hear this, along with other shows, as part of your PWTorch VIP membership with exclusive podcasts just for members, compatible with the Apple Podcasts app. Visit pwtorch.com/govip for details and sign up form.
Yes, this really was another awesome match on this show. There are a lot of awesome matches on this show. On paper, you'd think this is a weird styles matchup because Bayley's more of a high flyer, although he does do a lot of sort of shoot kicks and martial arts type moves, and Thatcher, you know, is a definite ground wrestler technician, but I had confidence in these guys. They're both so good, I was sure they could make it work, and they really did. Early on, it was Thatcher is almost like this monster in a monster movie stalking Bayley, and Bayley would try to attack him and maybe get a couple shots in, but it wouldn't be enough, and Thatcher would take over. And there was this running storyline where Bayley kept trying to hit like a spin kick or some kind of spin kick, and Thatcher would catch his foot and then chop him or attack him somehow, and that actually paid off later. Bayley did what I called Vader bomb style double knees. Like, he actually did the pump splash off the ropes but into a double knee onto Thatcher for a two count. Thatcher absorbed some hard sternum kicks, and he got a belly-to-belly throw for a two count. Then a camel clutch where he also pulled Bayley's leg backwards and ripped at his ear, which you have never seen the Iron Sheik do. Basically, a lot of the match was Thatcher trying to work over Bayley's arm, basically almost ripping it out of its socket. Bayley managed to dump Thatcher to the apron, and he hit a pump kick, then a triangle moonsault to the floor. Bayley did a very cool leg sweep, and for once, he actually landed the double knees moonsault on the apron. It seems like most times I've seen him, he misses that move, and it's very scary because you think that it's going to turn his knees into powder one of these days. And then finally, like I said, Bayley was finally able to outstrike Thatcher, and he hit that spin kick that Thatcher had caught on multiple tries. And it was doing that kick that led to him being able to get the ultimate weapon. So this was a very cool, like, in-match story within this match. The whole match was really fun to watch. It's very stiff, very brutal, and just good psychology throughout.
There is a Timothy Thatcher-Jonathan Gresham match from Beyond Wrestling about 7 years ago on Beyond Wrestling's YouTube. Or 7 years of the video It's been up.
Oh, it's on YouTube now?
Yeah, just looked it up.
Okay. Well, I mean, they weren't who they were now. Well, at least Gresham wasn't, but we'll have to check it out.
Yeah, maybe we'll do that. We have so much wrestling to cover in the next couple of weeks that one of our VIP matches we've been trying to cover for about a month, but we'll add that to the queue.
Sure.
The next match, also a match that was based off of the previous show in January. Alan Angels and Kevin Blackwood, now a tag team, teaming up against Brian Keith and Starboy Charlie. Angels and Blackwood joined forces, attacked Charlie. Keith came out to his defense, challenged them to a tag team match. This match was it. The Starboy Charlie was a lot of times your face in peril. Brian Keith came in for the save. This match actually, which is weird, and it kind of also shows my age, had me harken back to the days of World Class Wrestling when things really got bad for the Von Erichs and they called in Bruiser Brody. In the fact that Brody wasn't going to win, but he was there to make sure things were taken care of. And that was kind of Brian Keith's role. He made sure that Charlie had a fair fight. He broke up several double team moves, and the finish ended up him, the second time, breaking up a double team move from Angels and Blackwood. And Charlie rolled up Blackwood in 11 minutes and 33 seconds. So Starboy Charlie and Brian Keith were your winners. And Angels and Blackwood had matching trunks or matching pants. But they have to go back to the drawing board. Justin, what were your thoughts on this one?
It was kind of weird seeing a heel Blackwood, like, do the snarling, evil, just menacing Blackwood. Usually it feels like, I think I've only ever seen him as a baby face or maybe a subtle heel for the occasion, but not doing a full out heel turn like this. I'd like to know, someone keeps bringing signs Starboy Charlie signs to AEW shows, and it's only because of doing West Coast or wrestling coast to coast for the past year that I understand that reference. Somebody out there really wants him to get a job. Yeah, like you said, it was like the match was mostly about beating up Charlie, and Brian Keith was the heavy who to kind of bail Charlie out and keep the match fair. Charlie tried to dive, but Angels lift the apron skirt, so Charlie got stuck and double teamed. You know, there's lots of apron skirt related moves in the indies. I found they did the heels did a dropkick German suplex combo and mocked the Mega Powers handshake, which really is blasphemy. Kincaid dubbed them the Moron Powers as a result. Later on, they tried to do the same Mega Power mock handshake, so Brian Keith came in and gave them both back suplexes simultaneously in a really funny spot. Keith did a somersault dive where it was like he pretty much, it looked like he took a flat back bump on the hard apron or the hard gym floor, but he popped up like he was just fine. The faces then walked into double submission holds, which I thought made them look kind of dumb. I was wrong because the faces managed to reverse and got their own double submissions on to redeem themselves. The heels did a powerbomb neckbreaker combo on Charlie, but Keith was able to make the save. Keith tried to do diamond dust, but Blackwood kicked him off the top the top of the rope all the way to the floor. Charlie tried a springboard corkscrew on the two heels, but they got all four of their knees up. Keith broke up another, like a powerbomb neckbreaker combo. And Charlie, I guess he rounded Blackwood for the pin. It wasn't, the camera work missed exactly what had happened. I was surprised. I thought the heels were going to win, given that Blackwood had just turned heel. And, we just got this team forming, and they even have matching trunks. It was like Charlie got his justice, but it seemed like it would have taken a couple more shows for him to finally get his triumphant win over these guys who had just screwed him over. I don't know if he'll fight Blackwood again. Also, his win here makes more sense by the end of the show, but I could see him going for like a revenge solo win against either Angels or Blackwood. But maybe from here he just moves on entirely to something else.
Searching for more great pro wrestling talk? Then join me, Jason Powell, host of the free weekly Pro Wrestling Boom podcast, Each week, you'll hear the latest news and analysis from me and my team at ProWrestling.net, along with other Pro Wrestling Media members. Plus, the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast features long-form interviews with notable names in the pro wrestling industry. Subscribe in iTunes, Stitcher, Downcast, and all your favorite secondary apps, or visit us directly at pwboom.com. Once again, that's pwboom.com.
Yeah, this match, you know, I enjoyed it as well, but I think it had the same sort of feel as the second match with Adrian Quest and Los Suavecitos against one-third of the conglomerate. I should mention, by the way, at the end of that match that Alpha Zoe said he's ready for Leo Rush, who he'll be wrestling at the next West Coast Pro show. But it had the same kind of feel of babyface attacked, either partners are injured or by themselves, they have someone come in to help them, they avenge the loss or they avenge the attack, and then they move on. With Charlie, he's always kind of been in the mix with Tyus Alexander, we'll get to him in a moment, and he's going to remain in the mix with Angels and Blackwood. I think the way they did this, especially since maybe Brian Keith will not be, my guess is he will not be at the next West Coast Pro show, only because I believe it's the day after the Revolver show. But
it didn't feel like he would be back.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'll get to why that in a minute. But so maybe, or maybe not back immediately, because obviously they have another show coming up in April. But I enjoyed this match. I like the potential of Angels and Blackwood as a team. They worked pretty well together. The story was that they had teamed before, and they did team at a show in February, West Coast Pro. But still not enough to beat Keith and Charlie. The main event was a tables, ladders, and chairs match for the West Coast Pro Championship between your champion, Tyus Alexander, and Nick Wayne. This match was all over the place. I should start out by saying that Tyus Alexander came out with a shirt that said Buddy Wayne's favorite wrestler. Buddy Wayne, for those of you who are not aware, Nick Wayne's late father. They did a lot of insane moves off ladders, off chairs, onto the floor. Both of them started bleeding. I saw, you know, both of these men are young in this sport. And while watching this, I said I could see them both wrestling, you know, in front of more people down the line in a similar match. But this was a lot, very brutal, you know, table lash and chairs. You go through tables, you get hit with chairs, you get thrown off ladders. The finish ended up being Tyus Alexander hitting a sweet time driver onto a chair and calmly climbing the ladder to win and retain the West Coast Pro Championship in 22 minutes and 39 seconds. I know Justin will go over some more of the moves. I did like the fact that like the finish was one big devastating move and he took him out so much that he could calmly climb the ladder. I like that aspect to it. There was some stuff that happened after the match. We'll get to that in a moment. But first, Justin, we'll love to hear your thoughts.
So when they come out, it looks like the referee has to hang the belt, you know, from a wire. And it looked like at first so the United Irish Center or wherever they were, it had like these very fancy chandeliers hanging up in the building. And it looked like at first they were actually going to hang the belt from one of the chandeliers, which I thought would have been very funny. It was just how the camera was set up. Probably the chandeliers are too expensive to risk doing something like that, but would have been a nice touch, I thought. Tyus, much like Vinny Massaro earlier, had a very hard time finding a chair under the ring. Like, he looked all over until he finally found one. I think these guys need to remember better where they stash their things before the matches. Early Tyus, he teased hitting Wayne with the folding chair, but he said he just set this folding chair up, sat in it, and slapped Nick Wayne right in the face. Wayne threw a chair right into Tyus's head, which is another spot I absolutely hate. It's just super dangerous. You know, very easy concussion. I don't think people should do that, seriously. But Nick Wayne took a back body drop into this ladder, leaning against the corner. Those kind of things always look very painful. Tyus set a chair on its side and sort of balanced it. Wayne was sitting like splayed against the corner, so Tyus set this chair on its side up against his crotch and then hit that chair with another which was a crazy spot because it's a razor thin margin of error for that kind of thing. They did a really cool sequence of spots where Wayne kept trying to dive on Titus. Titus kept catching him. Wayne would escape whatever Titus was finally was trying to do until Wayne was finally able to get a tilt-a-whirl DDT. Wayne gave Titus a cutter off a ladder through a table, or to quote Kincaid, sending Titus off the other side of a ladder through the apocalypse, which was very dramatic. One of Nick Wayne's like signature moves is called Wayne's World, which I think is kind of funny because I'm pretty sure that movie was released 10 years before he was born. And I don't know if it has a lot of cultural staying power anymore. Perhaps it does. I do have a 65-year-old coworker who still says not at the end of sarcastic statements fairly regularly. So perhaps it still does. Titus gave Nick an absolutely sick-looking dead-eye or inverted pile driver on the apron, and that busted Wayne open. Titus set up four chairs in two rows of two outside the ring, but the seats were thankfully facing each other instead of back-to-back, so they didn't take a crazy back-breaking bump. Wayne ended up doing a diving like destroyer through these chairs. The chairs kind of separated as the guys were coming down. One chair got bent, but the other three appeared to have just slid away and to be unharmed and did not break their falls. I didn't love the finish like you. I thought these things you usually expect something more. I don't know, like, I guess a more back. I don't know. I was expecting a more back and forth finish, and it just felt kind of anticlimactic, especially for the heel to do something like one devastating move that really wasn't illegal since anything goes. And Titus just beat Wayne until Wayne couldn't go anymore, which at least it's like establishes Titus as a strong heel champion. So I can understand it in that regard. It wasn't what I expected. Also, I knew how much time was left in the show, so I was surprised the match was over because I really thought it was probably going to go another 5 minutes, but it was a good match. They did a lot of crazy things and took a lot of crazy bumps, but I think in some ways I would like to have just seen a straight match between the two. They did. I know they did do a straight match that ended in a draw at the last West Coast Pro show, the February show. So I might check that out on my own just to see what a regular match between them would have been like. It was very good, but I don't know. It wasn't what I thought it was going to be.
Give yourself a reason to look forward to going to the mailbox each week with a PW Torch newsletter paper copy subscription. Details at pwtorch.com/papercopy. It's 12 pages every week, packed with my TV reports, along with exclusive features such as my cover story on the top story of the week, our pay-per-view roundtable reviews from the Torch staff, exclusive feature-length columns from Greg Parks, Rich Fan, Sean Radican, Alan Cunahan, and Zach Haydorn, Torch Talk transcripts, the latest news, and more. pwtorch.com/papercopy. Take a break from screen time and settle in every week with a mega dose of wrestling news and analysis with a Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, paper copy edition, in the year 2022. You can get a full year of home delivery for just $99. Or try us for an 8-week trial subscription. pwtorch.com/papercopy.
After the match, Nick Wayne is getting assistance from some of the staff, West Coast Pro, some of the trainees. Tyus Alexander looks like he's going to attack him. They kind of go around Wayne. He ends up attacking some of the trainees. Vinny Massaro comes out for the save, kind of gets Alexander away. He does the Cardinal Sin in wrestling. He turns his back on an evil person. So, of course, Alexander hits him with the belt, starts beating him up. Starboy Charlie runs out with his feud with Alexander. Kevin Blackwood and Alan Angels run out to attack him, and I'm sitting there thinking, well, Brian Keith has to show up, right? They just had a tag match about half an hour ago. I guess he left the building.
Yeah.
Because instead of him, a big return happened, which is former West Coast Pro Champion, who Tyus Alexander won the belt from, Jacob Fatu. He runs out, cleans house, and the baby faces stand tall. The heels walk away. Alexander Slayer champion. In fact, Chris Hero, West Coast Pro matchmaker, announced that at the next show there will be a match between the six men left in the ring. Taz Alexander, Alan Angels, and Kevin Blackwood against Jacob Fatu, Starboard Charlie, and Vinny Massaro. So I did like the fact that this match didn't just end with just the result, and it led people into a reason to watch further West Coast Pro shows.
Yeah, it set up multiple challengers for Titus Alexander down the road, which I think is really cool because more directions to go. The only thing I didn't like was Nick Wayne just disappeared. You know, I guess he's not part of this immediate future plan. So he would just vanish from the ring. It's like, I thought they could have helped him up, or he could have posed with them a little just to say job well done. Just, it felt empty to me, but otherwise it's good to have to lay out a future direction like this. So it's exciting in that regard.
Well, I like the fact that he was selling the defeat.
Yeah.
This whole thing started because all these people ran down because he needed help out of the ring. So if he needs help out of the ring and he's injured, the people need to tend to him and get him away from the situation, especially once it escalates to further violence. So I like that because it just made sense to me. But that was West Coast Best Coast. And West Coast Pro, I try not to show too much favoritism here on this show, but they are one of my favorite independent wrestling promotions. I've enjoyed a lot of their shows. I enjoy the fact that they have matches that set up future shows, gives you a reason to tune in, that we watched a show back, 6 weeks ago or so, and there's references to this show as well as previewing their next show in April. A lot of good matches, different matches, and furthering feuds. So excellent show from them. Definitely one that I hope to catch more of in the future.
Yeah, I thought this was a fantastic show. Pretty much all the matches were really good, or really good to great to excellent. There's, several matches could have been match of the night. And I think it is very smartly booked and paying off stuff we had seen the last show we watched in January, but also setting up stuff for the future. And it holds true to the classic something for everyone ethos, because there were a lot of different styles of matches we saw here. A hardcore match, a lucha match, a couple crazy spot fest matches. So, yeah, I do think West Coast Pro is one of the best indies out there right now. And this is proof of that. This is a very good show.
And that's available on IWTV, for those of you who have not seen it. Next week on Wrestling Coast to Coast, Justin and I are going to we're going to discuss a show from the East Coast, which is GCW's Eye for an Eye. The main event is Nick Gage versus Masha Slamovich for the GCW title.
Masha's back on Wrestling Coast to Coast.
Back on Wrestling Coast to Coast. Mike Bailey is on there. He is teaming with Jordan Oliver against the Time Splitters, Alex Shelley and Kushida, Bandido versus Gringo Loco. But the match that I'm most excited about, Matt Cardona versus Homicide.
Yes, like that should be very entertaining.
This week, for our VIP listeners, we will be discussing a match that we honestly had in the queue for almost a month now, or at least 3 weeks. But our VIP matches have changed every week based on all the circumstances. So we're finally going to discuss this match. And that is Dax Harwood versus Mike Bailey from WrestleCade last November. That match is available on YouTube. And the other match, we referenced that if we didn't do West Coast Pro, we would do Action Wrestling. West Coast Pro was available, so we did that show as we just talked about. We owe Action Wrestling a full card. I know we've done some matches VIP, and I know the point will come where we will give them the full treatment. I think we've done one show so far, but we decided to do the main event for that show for our VIP listeners this week, and that is for the Action Tag Team Championship, Violence is Forever, Dominic Guarini and Kevin Koo versus Culture Inc., Eli Knight, and Malik Bozdi. Before we talk about those VIP matches, Justin, do you have any plugs?
Sure. As always, feel free to drop us a line at torchcoasttocoast@gmail.com. If you have any questions, issues you'd like us to discuss, any matches or promotions you'd like us to check out, we would love to hear from you. So feel free to email us at torchcoasttocoast@gmail.com. I can be found on Twitter at jmcclelland1, JMCCLELLAND1.
And I'm at Twitter at Mind of Maitland, where I haven't tweeted much the last week, but maybe more in the future.
Yeah, it's expecting more Oscar tweets.
Oh, I don't like the Oscars as a show. You know that's a terrible show. It's too long. The Tonys are much better. If you want to see an award show, watch the Tonys. The Oscars are pretentious. Pat yourself on the back for hours about movies, most of which I either did not watch or did not like. But I know you like the Oscars.
I did. I didn't tweet about them, but I liked them. It was a fun, I don't know if it was a fun show, but I still like to watch all the movies and try and get involved in what's going to win and just think about them.
And that's good. I think one of the things that the wrestling discourse should teach all of us is, you know, if you like something, that's okay. If someone else doesn't like it, that's okay too. We live in a world with technology and preferences, and as long as you're not bothering anybody else, that's fine. But that's it for the Mr. Rogers lesson of the day. We're going to move on now to talk about some of those VIP matches I talked about before. To hear Justin and I talk about those, you have to be a VIP member of PW Torch. To become one, check out membership info at pwtorch.com/govip, where the daily casts are presented with ads and plugs removed, plus VIP exclusive content, 30 plus years of newsletter archives, 15 plus years of podcast archives, and hundreds of retro radio shows from the 1990s, plus daily VIP exclusive podcasts, a new weekly newsletter, and an ad-free web browsing experience. Again, that's pwtorch.com/govip. For Justin McClelland, I'm Chris Maitland. Thank you, AMR, and thank you to all of our Daily Cast listeners. We'll be back next week to talk about GCW's Eye for an Eye. But now it's time for VIP.
PW Torch is now on YouTube. Check out our relaunched, revamped, and reinvigorated YouTube channel after many years sitting dormant, collecting dust. And now it's back, shinier, brighter. It smells better. It's our PW Torch YouTube channel. And you can check out daily news updates, the weekly fireside chat with Tyler Sage and Zach Haydorn, and my Keller commentaries. The first Keller commentary was my rebooking of WrestleMania 38's lineup. I used all the same wrestlers, but none of the same matches. And I tried to make a better two-night event. Decide for yourself. Go check it out. YouTube.com/PWTorch. And be sure to hit subscribe and like our videos. We've got a PW Torch VIP sale going on this month. If you are interested in becoming a VIP member, you can get $6 off any subscription. That brings a one-month sub down to $4. And you can listen to our AEW Revolution post-event roundtable. Todd Martin, Rich Fan, and I discuss the event for about an hour right after the show ended, exclusively for VIP members. You also will get the WrestleMania post-show roundtables following Night 1 and Night 2 at the beginning of next month as part of that deal, and you get everything in between. I have brought back the Ask the Editor version of the Wade Keller Hotline. The last two Wednesdays, we've dropped that with me responding with long-form answers to a wide array of topics. And the Focus on AEW and Focus on WWE insider news updates with my expanded analysis have also been brought back more frequently lately, including breakdowns of minute-by-minute numbers for Dynamite and SmackDown in two recent updates, and also behind-the-scenes news on Bray Wyatt and how he's being written and by whom, and other exclusive backstage notes and insights. We also are running our 18 Years Ago podcast series on the nearly 18th anniversary of podcasts when they were originally published back in 2005. We feature them on the PW Torch VIP podcast feed. This includes our post-pay-per-view roundtables and also Wade Keller hotlines with a ton of insider news. And right now, this week, we are running a series of podcasts detailing with incredible behind-the-scenes details, sometimes excruciating details, on what was going on with Edge, Lita, and Matt Hardy in that kind of love triangle controversy of 2005 that changed the course of several careers. At the time, I reported a ton of details on how the locker room was reacting to them, how Vince McMahon, if he was involved, because Vince was actually away with his injury at that time, if he was involved, and just the ups and downs and the drama of everything that blew up behind the scenes there. It's also the beginning, 18 years ago, of John Cena and Batista's push, and there's a lot of fun analysis of what we thought of them at the beginning of their upward trajectory. I could go on. There's just so many great VIP exclusive features. You get these shows ad-free and plug-free, and you get access to our ad-free lightning-fast VIP website with all the content that's on the free site, plus bonus content, including the roundtable reviews in written format from the Torch staff of AEW Revolution. We'll be doing that for WrestleMania coming up also, plus exclusive columns and more. So go VIP, pwtorch.com/govip. The coupon code to get $6 off, and you can apply that $6 coupon to a one-month, a three-month, or a one-year sub. But again, that brings a one-month sub down to $4 for everything I just mentioned and more. The coupon code is March23. March23. Enter that when you sign up at pwtorch.com/govip. And yes, we are compatible with the Apple Podcasts app. When you sign up, you'll get an email and you click on that link and it authorizes you. No advanced settings, no passwords, nothing complicated. And we are compatible with many other podcast apps in a similar way. pwtorch.com/govip, March 23. It's a good time to go VIP.